welcome to the Mech Show, the show where we talk about everything happening on the Apple side, even during the summer where usually there's not too much happening. But surprisingly enough, there is some stuff we can talk about this week, some news. And in order, for that, I have a really cool panel with me today. Kind of the regulars, I would say, but it's always good. Doc is just showing us his desk. That's really cool. bottom left on my screen, we have Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And it's great to get to hang out with all of you on yet another beautiful Friday.
Yeah, it's like always the highlight of my week. I don't know how it is for you. It's always fun.
Yeah, I look forward to this every single week.
Me too. How's Border doing? Any changes since the last week?
Actually, I'm really concerned. Uh-oh. Because I haven't seen any wildlife for a couple days. And, there's not even raccoons or deer. Hmm. So I'm actually worried. Do the animals know something that we don't?
Or have you guys just eaten them all?
That's possible
season,
too.
So you never know.
Okay. It's possible we've eaten through everything in nature.
It's absolutely possible right now. Next to him we have Callum. Hi buddy, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, okay. Yeah, happy to be back on the show. Talking about everything Apple, I suppose, yeah.
And looking forward to it. You told me in the pre-show you've had a little bit of a difficult week.
Yeah, just a lot of difficult repairs and a lot of repairs that have just not quite gone to plan. So we had a 12-inch MacBook that wasn't turning on, and opened it up. It had some liquid damage on the audio board and the USB-C. Mm-hmm. Changed them both. Turned it on. Worked perfectly, apart from the microphone. So my thinking was the microphone's been shorted out when the audio board's been liquid damaged. Changed the microphone, and now no audio at all. So
perfect.
Wonderful things like that. So stuff I deal with every day, but still, still does your head in somewhat. So
oh yeah, it does. And last, but by no means least, we have the guy who just snuck in last second, right after we started. Doc, how are you doing? Early morning.
What's happening? It's extremely early morning, and it's my country's birthday, so I'm allowed to sleep in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, technically it's tomorrow, but no, absolutely.
I'm just joking. It's just been a busy week.
No, it's fine. I mean, we know it's early for you, so a couple minutes don't really matter. You almost made it. We decided to start, and then we're and then you just snuck in 10 seconds later.
That's how you do it. Slide in right before the teacher starts to test.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's how you do it. All right. There were a couple of things happening. Maybe we start with some good news. Apple has finally opened up a website for Apple Cards. You can go to cards, I think card.apple.com, if I remember correctly. And you will basically find everything that you would be able to do on your iPhone on that website. So you can pay for your bill. You can even apply for the card without an iPhone now. Don't know why you would do that, but maybe someone doesn't have an iPhone but still wants an Apple Card. You can download statements and everything. It's actually
just like
cool.
Every other credit card ever.
Exactly. Took Apple long enough, but yep.
I was surprised that they didn't have this on day one.
I think it shows Apple's priorities. It was basically, we're an iPhone and an app company, so we're going to do the iPhone app first, integrate it into the operating system, and then let's see when we have time for everything else.
Yeah, that sounds very Apple.
Yeah, I mean, they rolled out a couple of other features way before they did the website. So it wasn't even like the next item on their list. Like there were other things like the statements and third-party integration to some extent and all of that way before they did the website.
I think one of the key elements that they added, what is that noise? It's driving me crazy. One of the key elements that they added was the ability for people to do like monthly installments on products other than iPhone 2. So I think that's going to help out, you know, when you do for, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's going to help out because one of the things that I used to just hear often, say when someone's buying a computer, right? Especially my student-oriented friends are early, you know, early workers, right? You just got out of college, you got your job. And they're like, well, I need a new Mac, but I want to know, like, what can I get for $600? And I'm like, nothing, you know? And they're like,
disappointment. Well, that's what you get right. for $600.
Right, right. So I don't know what it is about when you first get out of school, but, like, I think I even run into that now sometimes when I want to buy something, say, superfluous. It's easy to save up to about $500 or $600, but that last $300 to $400 to get you over the $1,000, or $400 to $500, I can't add this early. For some reason, that one's always a problem because you get the $600 and then something that comes up that makes you spend $300. And then you get back the $600 and something that comes up that makes you spend $200. And then you get back the $600, you know, so it becomes like a hurdle. So it allows someone possibly to even, you know, pay cash for half of it and then just do that, you know, the Apple way for the last couple of payments or whatever. And I think that's going to help out a lot of the guys just getting started, you know, new business, you know, new student, whatever, you know. So I think that's also beneficial too, especially when it comes to the Mac and the iPad side of it. Apple TV, if you're going to drop $30 a month on the Apple TV versus giving them the $150, you should stop that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
that, you can get adds more flexibility, which can't be a bad thing overall.
Well, especially now. I think their timing is on point. I don't know, again, if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because you're asking people who with some pure uncertainty to add to their debt versus, like, leave it alone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it might be what they need to do because they have to work from home. And so being able to get that new equipment so that they can work from home as opposed to, say, lose their job, mm-hmm. maybe it's worth it. You know,
yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like especially for the more expensive stuff, like like a MacBook or whatever, MacBook Pro. Yeah, that might be worth it. Like if you can make the money throughout the year instead of like having it up front for whatever reason.
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes it's worth that.
Well, and also you think about the gig economy people. This is where it would come in handy too, right? You're just getting started out. You're the graphic artist or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can get your Mac over here, well, heck, at least my iMac. So, you know, my fully loaded 27-inch iMac cost me $113 a month. Mm-hmm. And by the time I charge people their $20 service fee or $25, sorry, service fee for editing their graphics, because for some reason, companies always lose their vectors or they never had vectors because their graphic designer designed it in Photoshop and never gave them a vector. You should fire your graphic designer right away. So I get to convert a lot of those. I convert 5 of those a month, which is nothing. My machine's paid for by just people not having their proper artwork for, you know, jeffgamet.com or whatever.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I should just probably start throwing $25 at you on a regular basis just to be safe.
That's a good idea. I like that.
That's the brass pole show, Jeff. Relax.
Oh. I mix those up sometimes.
Apple has released this year's Design Awards, highlighting, well, most, I would say, not just mostly, exclusively iOS or iPadOS apps. At least one of them is actually a Apple Arcade app. But yeah, I mean, it's always interesting to see what Apple puts out as this is the best app of basically the last year. The apps that got an award were Darkroom, which is like a well, photo editing app, I would call it, photo and video editor, actually, for the iPhone and the iPad. Loom, which is like a really cool animation app from what I've seen. I've only seen like bits and pieces here and there. Then there is Shaper 3D, which is like a 3D cut, like a CAD app, which is really cool. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I think my skills are not reaching that level yet, but it is a really cool app. And then one I've heard about before from like musicians is StaffPad, which is like a iPad, like a musical notation app, like a handwritten musical notation app, which apparently is very, 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 very popular amongst musicians. And then, as I said, there's a like a game for Apple Arcade called Sayonara Wild Hearts. I'm not a gamer, so I can't really tell you much about that one. Another one is Sky Children of the Light, which is a multiplayer game.
Either Ewan or Jeff picked that. I think Ewan or Jeff picked that as one of the picks of the week.
It was probably Ewan.
Yeah, it does ring a bell, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Song of Bloom is a really cool puzzle game. It allows players to explore a story told in rapidly changing art styles, which sounds really interesting. And then the other, I think, bigger one that I knew about and that I saw is Records Fall, which is kind of like a I want to say like a Monument Valley style game, like really beautiful graphics and everything, but it's kind of card based, so also really cool. Yeah, I mean, as I said, nothing for me. I mean, no Mac apps at all, zero. Like none of them, I don't even think have a Mac app.
Well, didn't they stop including Mac apps a couple years ago?
I don't think so.
In the developer.
No, because Day One got a redesign award for the 3.0 output, maybe like last year or the year before.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you have to go back quite a bit to even find a Mac app or like an exclusive Mac app. There were a couple that had like iOS app and a Mac app. But Apple seems to highlight...
That must be what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, Apple seems to highlight the iOS and the iPad apps more, which kind of makes sense if you think about it. I mean, that's their biggest platform.
Yes, that's where most people are. Largest user base, yeah.
So, I mean, if they want to highlight something and have, like, hopefully crazy sales for those apps, that's the way to go. And I mean, let's not forget, this is not a democratic thing. This is Apple as a company highlighting things that they want to highlight for whatever reason.
Yes.
You know what I think, though? I do think that one of the things that comes into the design award isn't always just aesthetic design. I think you often see apps that do something, you know, maybe even... say computationally, that's different from the way that we've done it all along. So they highlight maybe also things that, you know, their developing software can do that, say, doing it in a standard development software wouldn't necessarily do, or make it that easy, or make it even a concept first, right? So I think, you know, things that are flexing your accelerometer plus your VR, say, plus your, you know, A12Z chip or something like that. You know, I think they do that too, because it's like, what did they used to call it? A tech highlight in other formats, you know, where there's just something that comes along that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't exist yet, but say I'm on a wedding shoot and I got two cameras, you know, these are the Callum O'Hara ZX12 cameras. And I can say, put them next to each other and the NFC cards would allow them to duplicate pictures so that somebody's SD card wouldn't fail and then lose the other card, you know? Mm-hmm. And that would be a highlight, because it's using a technology that only that company can do, kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think the other thing is there are very few new Mac apps. I mean, volume-wise, like, there are way more new iOS app or even redesigned iOS apps and iPad OS apps than there are Mac apps. Like, the Mac
Store... Also, I'd say as well, most of the apps I use on my Mac don't come from the App Store anyway. So
that's true as well. That might actually play a bigger role. Like, Apple won't highlight something that you can't download on the Mac App Store.
That's funny, Caleb. I didn't really think about that, but you're kind of right. And I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of the apps that we tend to use, especially because we're more of the tech ilk, are sort of hardware-oriented apps that got booted. Or in setup. Like, to me, all my design award winners are in setup.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
No.
I mean, I'm just looking at my doc now. I've got Brave Browser, I've got Spotify, I've got Zoom, I've got Colocoy, I've got, you know, a few other bits and pieces in there, Steam, you know, and then everything else is stock apps. There's, I'd say Slack's the only one I've gone to the app store and actually downloaded that doesn't come with my Mac anyway. So,
There's also some some new software for your Mac. But not the kind of software you would want to install or like necessarily would like to have on your Mac.
Oh, malware.
We have new malware news. There's a new, like a new ransomware, or like actually it's a combination between like standard malware and ransomware that comes with apparently with at least right now with pirated software. I mean, I wouldn't like you never know where it's going to end up. It's called EvilQuest, which is also a really funny name. It was.
I love the name.
Me too.
I want to play the game.
So it should be on that list of awards you've just mentioned.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That would be like that would be funny. It's for what it does actually pretty sophisticated. Like people who know much better how this stuff works and whatever than us. People from Malwarebytes have said it's basically, it looks like someone built a really, really sophisticated malware and then decided to make some money on the side. So it will encrypt files on your disk and then ask $50 as a fee to unlock them.
But if I'm remembering correctly, it doesn't tell you where you need to send the $50.
Yeah, exactly.
They came up with this really great concept for a ransomware malware package and then totally dropped the ball on the follow through.
Yeah, and especially it does not remove the malware. Even if you figured out where to pay and paid it, it never removes it. So it's like a complete scam.
Yeah, it is fairly difficult to remove. I mean, when I've got rid of ransomware in the past, it's always been I've had to take off the EFI chip from the motherboard and like physically reprogram it, which is fun. And it's obviously getting more and more complex as well. So, you know, and especially with Apple's new security chips, it's probably going to get to a point where it's impossible to actually do anything.
Yeah. The main thing that it does seems to be that it's actually installing a keylogger. That is able to look for, credit card info, passwords, like the usual stuff, which is more valuable anyway, I would say.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, as I said, be careful. I mean, Apple is obviously doing everything they can, and Malwarebytes and so on, there are apps that take care of this. But, yeah, hopefully it doesn't spread too far.
This is a great reminder that pirating software is bad.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
In addition to you getting burned for doing it, you're also screwing developers. Mm-hmm. So don't steal software.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about it is the sad part is, and this used to send Kelly into a tizzy because they were always pretty well featured at Macworld and stuff like that. I can't remember the name of the company now because they were always a little over the top and a little chauvinistic. They're basically like a Mac utility before Clean My Mac came out.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
But they were technically basically just malware themselves.
Oh, yeah. Mac, how was it called? It's Mac something.
Mac Keeper.
Mac Keeper.
Mac Keeper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're basically malware.
That was a horrible one. But a lot of people I know, like I would go to clients' houses to work on their computers, and these guys bought this stuff. Mm. And I was like, okay, you just proven to me that you've been downloading porn, because this thing came up and told you to buy it and you bought it.
Yep.
And yeah, it was they were so cheesy.
Yeah. I mean, one thing we should mention is it's not just pirated software how you could catch something like this. It's also if you downloaded an application from an untrustworthy or compromised source. So if you Google for, like, I don't know, Google setup, and you like land on a, like, on the wrong website, for example, and you install setup.
That you land on the SetERP website,
for example,
made to look like the SetApp website.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that could happen too. So you have to be extra careful when you download apps from any source. Like, it doesn't matter where it's from. If it's not the Mac App Store, then that is definitely a problem.
These guys are pretty good too, though, because they did it basically off a little stitch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason why that's a big one is because, if this is kind of funny, if you creep around in the Adobe, what is that thing called? The forums. If you creep around the Adobe forums, people are being there asking questions like, well, I installed Little Stitch and I blocked all of the ports, and yeah, I still can't get Photoshop to run. And I'm like, you shouldn't say that here, and mm-hmm. you didn't get your Photoshop in the real space, and... you know, I'm not the police or whatever, but you might want to delete that comment.
Yes, yeah.
And then so, because Little Stitch is highly connected to your Adobe products, which mm-hmm. is probably one the most pirated thing out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these guys are hilarious. They stuck it to Little Stitch. That's funny, but it's not funny. Because, mm-hmm. again, sometimes, you know, this is your computer, right? And you share it with your kid. And you do everything you're supposed to do. You're the business guy. But your kid's friend goes, oh, man, if you download Photoshop, you can make these cool memes or these logos for your Twitch or your TikTok.
Uh-huh.
So they go and they download it. They don't know any better. Uh-huh. And they follow the instructions and they install Little Stitch. And next thing you know, your entire work computer is jacked.
Yep.
So it's not just okay that you might not do it. You got to talk with your kids about, you know, don't download this stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Yep. You know, dealing with software and the internet in general, to me, it's a lot like having safe sex talks with people, because a lot of the same rules apply.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. It sounds funny, but pretty much.
Yeah, you're right. Last bit of Apple news, more like a... Well, I want to say a little bit of a sad story. The first MacBook Pro with a Retina display is now officially obsolete. Apple literally just obsoleted it the other day. Has been a while. It was 2012, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And now officially, at least from Apple, you're not getting any hardware support or anything anymore. Which means guys like Callum will help you out still, but yeah,
from it's Apple, a very, very nice MacBook.
And it is.
It's a MacBook that I had up until about a year ago, A1425. Yeah, it's absolutely fine still, and things like this do my head in a bit, and I completely get it from Apple's point of view that it's like, you know,
it's 8 years old.
Yeah,
exactly, but it's like, but you buy one from 2015 and they're exactly the same still in it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. It is just me being in my head, it's fine, but it is 8 years old and that's plenty of time.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's more nostalgia probably for me, but yeah.
Yeah, it's sad from a nostalgic standpoint, but from a positive perspective, holy crap. How many other computer manufacturers would still be offering official support for an 8-year-old computer?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, people get mad at Apple's 5-year obsolescence, but I'm like, you know, that's kind of long for a computer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 5-year, probably not. Like a lot of the Macs I've sold to friends are still running to this day. Like, not everything. I think my black MacBook died.
My 2012 still works. Actually, my 2008 still works. And that's the, I say that's the curse of the Mac. I tell all of my customers, that are holding on to old computers because they fell in love with it for some reason. Hmm. I'm like, that's the curse of the Mac. It does kind of still function, but again, maybe not for the casual user, but as a business user, you're killing yourself if you roll a machine older than 5 years because your competition got a new one and they're moving quicker than you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm sorry. It's just a speed thing. It's nothing to do with falling in love with your computer or whatever. The new ones are always that much faster that you can get done what you need to get done faster. And therefore, it's costing you more money than you think you're saving by not buying a new computer.
Yeah.
But that'll be
just... A bad worker.
Although you say that, Doc, I think it really does depend what you're doing. I think even if you are working in sort of business, if you're a managing director of a company and all you're dealing with is emails and Zoom calls and Skype calls and stuff like that, you know, just before we went into lockdown, I did this show on a 2008 iMac and it was fine. It had an SSD in it, but it was absolutely fine. So, I think it really does depend what you're doing on it as well. If you're trying to do Photoshop and stuff like that, then no, don't. That's very silly. But if you're just doing your kind of basic kind of low-end stuff on it, you know, web browsing and using Mail and using Zoom and stuff like that, it's fine still. It really is.
Yeah.
So if that's what your whole output is, use an iPad and a monitor.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, if you have it, if you have that old Mac and it's still doing the job, I mean, why, like, and as Callum said, if email and websites and Zoom calls is all you need, then yeah, there is probably very little need. And I think the same is true for personal. Sure, but I mean, and you have to balance that out. And I think that's also Doc's point. You have to look at what you're doing and decide whether that's like worth the time also that you spend on stuff, maybe taking a little longer. Is that still worth it? For personal use, that's a different story. I mean, sure, like, I mean, an iPad would probably do the job even better, but if you have an old 2008 or 2010 or 2012 MacBook Pro and it's still doing it, and for the few things you need it for, it's fine, then yeah, keep using it.
I think it becomes when you're stuck at the skip one OS backwards, right? So for us, it would be if you're stuck with High Sierra and you can't upgrade, your computer's too old. Because you start to run into security issues. And what no one ever talks about is your security issues is everybody's security issues, right? Not so much, again, maybe on Macs as on other devices, but I can't tell you how many times I get emails from friends that I know don't know how to send these type of emails because their computer has something sending emails for them. you know what I'm saying? Like, I get it. It's like, I don't know. If you're a mechanic, it's okay to have an old car because you know how to make sure it's not smoking up the environment. But when you got somebody that's just pure cheap and they're rocking the old bucket and there's like 8 pounds of smoke coming out the back because they don't know how to fix it, that's horrible. You're not being a good citizen.
But, I mean, but that depends on your means. Like, I've sold quite a few of my Macs to students. Or to friends that literally just needed them for email, and basically that's it. And a lot of them couldn't afford any other Mac, and they were happy to have that older machine that did the job. And the same thing would be true for cars. Not everybody can afford a car that doesn't smoke. Sometimes you have to understand take what that, you need, what you have, what you can afford.
I 100% get that, but if you rock in a duster because you're just being that person that wants to rock the duster, you're kind of being a jerk. We're not talking about the people that can't afford it.
Yeah.
We're talking about the people that just do it
because they think it's cool.
Yeah, I guess. You know, yes, that's the proper terminology. Or they're just being lazy. Like, I definitely know, I live in a medium to moderate income building, and we got people that have dusters for no other reason than this. Their level of cheap, you know. Okay. They got, like, you know, high end jobs, everything, and they still just spray spew all over the place with the old Radilac. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, I got the email guys. I get the guys that only use web browsers for the most part. That's a lot of the, you know, sort of the older people too, because that's all they use. and you know, a lot of them are more inclined to fall in love with their computer because, you know, maybe there's a sentimental value. I have a customer right now that makes me keep her tower working because it was her husband's computer and he's no longer here. And it's getting harder and harder and harder to keep that tower working. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like a 2009 tower, but she wants to run that sucker forever.
Yeah.
And I get that.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
she don't understand why it takes 12 minutes to start up now. So don't turn it off.
Exactly.
I'm like, you really got to stop turning it off because the power supply is going to get next to hard to get. And so just leave it on. Hmm. She's like, oh, but it eats so much electricity.
It's like, yeah.
That's then just leave computers. It off.
I'm then like, that's what old computers did. You know, new computers use less electricity because they get better power management. Mm. So there's a lot more than just the operating system or the security or this. I mean, there's things, the reason why they keep getting better. They're not just getting better purely for monetary reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of Mac and macOS, there were some announcements the other week that we didn't talk about. First and foremost, there's macOS 11. Yes, now it goes all the way up to 11. And the funny thing is, I think it was it Phil Schiller? I don't remember. In one of the podcast interviews, someone from Apple actually said that. So they leaned into that bit a little bit. macOS 11, I mean, obviously, I think 11 because it is quite a changed system, not just design-wise, but also under the hood because they're supporting the new ARM Macs that we're going to get to in a second. But they have like a completely new design and they have like things like widgets. They have a really new, like basically taking a lot of things from iOS or from iPadOS, like the control center and so on, and bringing that over to the Mac. New sounds, really interesting. I'm really excited to try them out. I haven't actually done that yet.
I was surprised with the new sounds because I was assuming that it, you know, it would just be sounds, whatever.
Yeah,
just
we settled on them. We have them. We've had them for forever. Like,
right. But surprisingly, I'm actually enjoying all the new alert sounds, especially, and this is totally sentimental, and I freely admit that, having the startup chime come back, and since it sets in firmware, when I boot back into Catalina, I still have my startup chime.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool. I mean, you could enable it before, but like it was more like a terminal hack that you had to know how to do.
Yeah, but you know, this is official.
This is the official checkbox. Official checkbox that you can have. There are more Catalyst apps. I mean, Catalyst in general got quite a few new capabilities, but they also Apple brought over messages and maps. So existing apps that had been on macOS before that are now Catalyst based and got all the functionality that we were missing. I mean, messages on the Mac was pretty sad, to be honest. I mean, it worked. You could do
a few things.
It was functional. Yeah, that's the right word. But it didn't have things like the stickers and like a lot of the nice things that the iOS and iPadOS side have. And Maps as well. I mean, Maps was lacking quite a few features on the Mac, which is crazy because the Mac app should have been the one that has the most features since it has the most power and screen and real estate and everything. It also shows you that Apple really likes or still cares about the Mac because a redesign wasn't necessary. They could have just said, well, the Mac is the Mac. It works. We're switching to ARM. That's it. Design stays the same. Everything stays the same. We just continue. And they didn't do that. And I actually wrote down a quote from the keynote. I think it was, I don't know who said it, but they said basically, we love the Mac. It's a tool we use to make all the products. And it's true. Yeah. I mean, that's what they use. Probably not exclusively. I'm pretty sure there are like a Windows device or a Windows PC here and there, or like a Mac running Windows, because there are some specialized tools that probably only run on Windows that they use. But for the most part, like probably 99.99% of the company uses Macs to create everything that we buy and use and enjoy. And I think that shows. It shows, like, they're using this every day. This is their daily work and probably also personal system. And, yeah.
You know, my first impression after booting up into Big Sur was that it felt like someone took Catalina and put a iPad OS skin on it.
Hopefully it works better than Catalina, because Catalina.
Play, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to pass judgment on that yet, because it's developer beta.
Yeah, it's a beta.
But just like overall functionality for, you know, just for regular day-to-day use, except for things that are brand new features, like having the widgets on the screen, mm-hmm. or being able to pin favorite conversations and messages, it feels like Catalina with a skin.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, this is developer beta 1.
Yeah, those are usually rough, especially the Mac betas have been rough in the past. Like, you could tell that less people were working on it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's pretty obvious. And I expect developer beta 2 will have a better feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be clear, I am not bagging on Big Sur at all, because, you know, this is like brand new, mm-hmm. and it's developer beta 1.
Yeah.
I'm just making some observations. So I am optimistic about where we're going to be with Big Sur this fall when it's time for it to mm-hmm. be an official release. As far as performance goes, running from an external SSD, it's surprisingly fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good sign.
Yeah, that definitely. And I mean, if you think about like how much probably has changed under the hood that we're not seeing. I mean, I've seen in the few sessions that I've been able to watch, like I'm like still watching stuff from Wednesday last week. So there's that much content, and I have that little time. But it's like there are so many under the hood, like changes under the hood for the new CPU architecture, but also some things that even Intel Macs will get, some changes to like how the disks are organized and stuff like that. There's like how the recovery works, like how the boot process works, like a lot of changes. And I mean, that isn't perfect in beta 1, I'm kind of expecting.
Yeah. And but we'll see changes.
Mm-hmm.
A change that I'm hoping we'll see with just the interface in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of elements have become too subtle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even more difficult to tell when something is a button as opposed to an ornamentation.
Mm-hmm.
And the contrast,
mm-hmm.
between different elements like that isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're dealing like with light gray on white,
mm-hmm.
for a lot of these elements, and that needs to change.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't take that as it is right now as how the final product would look like.
Right.
I remember even in past years when Apple changed like bigger changes, like I think was it iOS 12 that changed quite a few things. Apple always, like, through the beta phase would listen quite heavily to this kind of feedback. And sometimes they would roll back certain features or like make subtle changes. Like, I remember like people were complaining about app icons, and Apple, like during the summer, during the beta period, updated them. I don't know whether that was already mm-hmm. planned or whether that was based on feedback, but they did. Like, it changed. And also, like, sometimes, as you said, like transparency changed. Like, even sometimes it's a subtle change. It was just a little bit less transparent, and it made it better. Things like mm-hmm. that. So they have shown the capability of adjusting even like interface elements slightly.
And I expect that's going to happen with Big Sur.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that what Apple did was they said, this is the aesthetic we're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Let's push it
mm-hmm.
in developer beta 1. and let's see what the reaction is to the different things that we're trying. And so, you know, so they, I think they took a few things to an extreme just so that they can see how that works. And then they can pull it back, and that's what we'll see in future betas.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, stuff like that is usually not, I mean, I don't know, but I wouldn't guess it's too difficult to change because a lot of it is probably just parameters in the system where they can say, okay, let's do the, or let's decrease the opacity by a little bit or something like that. And then,
right. And they probably have code chunks in different builds internally where they've got all these different interface elements.
Oh, probably, yeah.
And then in dev beta 2, we'll get one of the different sets. And so in a manner of speaking, there'll be A-B testing interface elements.
Yeah, as I said, they've done that in the past, and I'm pretty sure. I mean, will it be perfect? Probably not. There's always something where some people like it one way, some people like it another way. That's always going to happen with interfaces like this. But like if the agreement, like the majority of people is, this is too much, then Apple will dial it back. I think that's always the case. Yep. There were so many smaller changes in Big Sur, but there was one big one, which is Safari 14, which is a pretty significant change, also based on what I've heard on other podcasts where actually Safari developers were talking about like what's going on behind the scenes. It's much faster than, I mean, Apple is saying it's 50% faster than Chrome on commonly used websites. So they picked apparently some example websites and ran benchmarks against them. It offers much better privacy. It has not just more protection features, but also the privacy dialog that shows you some key privacy information about certain websites. And I think the biggest change, I mean, performance will be pretty important, but the biggest change is that you will be able to kind of, I don't want to say install extensions from other browsers because it is not as easy as just taking the extension. The developer has to go in and repackage it. But for the most part, they're saying with minimal effort, a developer could take their extension from Firefox or from Chrome, and repackage them and put them on the App Store, basically in the Mac App Store, a special extension section, and then you can use them.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Me too. There's.
I missed the extension section.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there are quite a few good extensions on Safari. Not gonna lie, but there are a couple that are missing and. This will make it simply very easy for developers, and I think for developers for extensions. At the same time, they're increasing security for extensions. So as a user, you can now decide whether an extension should always run, like, I don't know, something like 1Password maybe, or whether an extension is like should only run for a certain website or for a certain period of time, like say run it for the next hour and after that disable it, or run it for today or anything like that. So they're also increasing performance because every extension, I mean, might potentially decrease performance of your websites that you're opening up. At the same time, also increasing security because if the extension can't access everything you do on the web and can't do anything with that, like siphon it off maybe without you knowing, I think that's also a win for everybody. And you get to decide, like, if you want, like, I don't know, if you have an extension that you want to give full access, well, it's your choice. You can do that.
I think it's been a long time coming, the new Safari as well. I think certainly on kind of my MacBook that I use day in, day out, I use kind of three browsers. I use Safari, Edge, and Brave. And to be honest, it's been getting very close that, you know, for me to say I might actually ditch Safari because Brave and Edge are actually a bit better than it. But I'm looking forward to using the new one. I haven't downloaded the beta yet, so I haven't tried it. I do need to, because there's some bits and pieces I need to check with regards to kind of hard drive partitioning and stuff like that. But I think it's been a long time coming for Safari, definitely, for it to be updated, just to, if not catch up, surpass some of its competitors out there. So
And I mean, Apple was very clear in I said, not in the keynote, they didn't talk about that, but in like more developer focused podcasts that they joined, where they said, we're not trying to add the latest features, like what other browsers are doing. We're not trying to get the biggest market share, which what I think Chrome is trying to do. For us, the most important things are privacy, security, stability. And we pick and choose what we include very, very carefully based on that. And they said, like, they're working in an integrated team. So they have, like, all, like, everybody who's working even vaguely in the area of Safari, they're working very closely together. So the JavaScript engine people are working next to the main Safari WebKit people. They're working next to the people who are working on extensions and so on. But as I said, their goal is not to be the best, or the browser with the most features and the flashiest features and like everything that is new is automatically immediately integrated. They were being very careful with what they integrate and what they don't.
I don't think Safari's ever been that. It's always been quite a lightweight browser anyway, but I think just in the past sort of 12 months for me personally, it has just started to lag behind with a few features that I know obviously they're not aiming to add every new feature, but you know just a few little things which I think will really enhance it. And you know, I've always liked Safari because it's been lightweight and because it's been quick, and if they're saying they've made it even quicker, you know, that can only be a good thing.
What wasn't mentioned in the macOS section but then was in sessions after is that Apple is also extending their support for web developers for certain features. So you can, for example, now integrate like biometric authentication, so Touch ID, Face ID, all of that, into your website, into your login flow. I mean, obviously, probably using Safari. No, very likely using Safari, you would need that. But if your users are using that, or if you're on iOS, you can directly on a website use that as, like, I don't know, a second factor or whatever you want to do with it. So in addition to payments on the web that were already possible before, they're also extending a lot of things to web developers to make outside of apps things better, even if you only have, in air quotes, only have a website.
So which is cool.
That is very impressive. And there's so much more stuff, like hidden stuff that we're not seeing that will, I think, have an impact.
Do you remember... I can't remember what it's called, but when Touch ID first came out, we had an app where you could unlock your Mac with your phone using your Touch ID.
Oh yeah,
I remember that.
It was called Mac ID. That's what.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, got Sherlocked by the Apple Watch.
Yeah, so basically, and so it kind of went away. But I've always wanted the 2FA to be, let me pick up my phone and look at it, or let me pick up my phone and stick my finger on it, and let that handle all of my 1Password stuff. And I think it's a really cool form of two-factor ID, because it's a better okay, so the Touch ID on a modern notebook is dope, but then all of the desktop Macs have never had that opportunity, right? So Touch ID has been rolling since, what, 2016? But, you know, here we are at 2020 and my iMac still doesn't have Touch ID. So why couldn't I use my phone as a second authenticator? And I've always wished that they would hurry up and do that. I don't know why, but it's just way better. I use my watch all the time to, like, you know, skip the system password. But I mean, just for general things like logging into the bank or let me log in on my phone and then pass that session through.
Handoff.
handoff. Mm-hmm. I was going to say co-locate. Hello. Yeah.
Yeah. It's continuity. So, what you
probably... Continuity yeah. is what I was looking for. Handoff yeah. is the smoother word. Yeah, but I want to, like, you know, I'm doing my plane check-in or whatever. Okay, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And then now it's frustrating on the phone. Pass. Okay, good. Let me get to work, you know. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's the type of experience that this is going to bring to the table. Mm-hmm.
You just have the same thought as me with that in terms of using handoff. It would be really cool if you could log into the bank on your phone and then just mm-hmm. hand it off to your Mac and have it on the screen. And,
that would be really neat
if they could do that.
And that makes it much, much harder to get your stuff stolen because, like, you physically, your body got to be in the room now.
Mm-hmm. What I've definitely seen is that the Apple Watch is being used more for authentication. So now, if you get like those system password prompts or touch ID prompts, you also get them on the Apple Watch. So you can just double click the side button, and it will authenticate.
Yeah, it does that now for the system stuff. I mean, for like websites mm-hmm. and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it should be doable, I think. Well, we'll see.
The
we'll
other one I would want to see is a lancet that pops out of your desk and gets a little drop of blood. You know, all a glucose test, or, you know, you got this USB swab, so you pull it up here. It's like, all right, go ahead, you're good.
Did you just stick an Apple Pencil in your mouth?
Yeah. I didn't run with it.
Okay, well, at least you didn't run with it.
What was that movie with the where everybody, or everywhere you had to basically give like a little blood sample? Was that Gattaca?
It could be Gattaca. Because, yeah, Gattaca. That's it. Because you didn't save enough to swim back.
Exactly. those are basically, I mean, there's so much more stuff under the hood that came out in sessions and whatever. But I think the biggest change, or the biggest announcement that Apple dropped, is what they call Apple Silicon, or alternatively ARM. Like even Apple people that are usually well trained still like using the word ARM a lot of times. But I mean, ultimately it's ARM64. It's the same chips that have been in your iPad and your iPhones. Or at least the ones what we know of. I mean, we don't know what Apple is going to bring out this year. They said there will be new Macs this year. So far, the developer transition kit that I've shipped and that some developers have gotten and are not allowed to talk about, even though someone already leaked the benchmark, or even though they're not allowed to do that, it's an iPad Pro. So it has the same CPU as from 2 years ago, basically. But it is a big transition, and it is a bigger transition than a lot of people, I think, can even see, because there's also a lot of subtle changes under the hood that Apple talked about in sessions. So even down to, for example, how drivers work, how they interact with the system, there are changes to that in ARM, on the ARM side. It works one way on Intel, it works another way on the ARM side. And that's stuff that Apple didn't like talk about, or nobody really thinks about, but that is important. That changes sometimes security, sometimes performance. Those are changes that Apple has worked on for years. And I mean, they introduced a new kind of a new app format, or like kind of the same app format extended. Like we've had new universal apps, which were, I think originally they were PowerPC and Intel.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also used them on the iPhone for basically, I think, for iPhone and iPad apps. So you could have a universal binary for both. And now they have Universal 2, which is Intel and ARM. So same idea, just, continued and improved. They've also introduced Rosetta 2, so another 2 that they're introducing. And I mean, the people who went through the Intel transition will remember Rosetta. That was their way of running PowerPC apps on Intel. And Rosetta 2 is kind of the same thing. I mean, the same thing in better, like it's the second version. So it's running Intel code on ARM. But better. So like back in the day, I remember the Rosetta, the old Rosetta, would basically run at or would do the translation on like at start time. That's why like starting an app took a little bit longer. And in this case, they're doing it for the most part at install time. So when you install an app and it's an Intel-based app, it will be translated. It will be prepared basically for you to start. And then when you start the app, it's already done. And you like the only thing that has to still run the translation layer or has to be done is the everything that is like, I don't know, just-in-time compilation. For example, JavaScript. Like JavaScript engines or anything like that. So yeah, a lot of things where you see that Apple has done this before and has learned.
All right, so I just had a thought, which I'm surprised I hadn't thought of before. Does this mean that you won't be able to clone an Intel Mac to an ARM Mac because you won't have the right version of the applications? Because you'll have your Intel version on the Intel Macs, and when you clone over, it's just cloning over the Intel version, not the ARM version of the apps.
In some cases, yes, probably, because if that app is old enough that it never got recompiled with Universal 2, then yes, that would be the case.
That's very interesting, though, that is to think about.
Yeah, but if that app is already, like, has been, I mean, basically any app that will be, hopefully every app that will be built from now on would have it already, have an ARM version, at least if developers have done it, and then it wouldn't matter. But yeah, every app that isn't
this comes into play. This comes into play in two ways. Number one, they're going to have to change migration assistant where it pulls the data and then tags the apps that need to be re-downloaded for, you know, a properly compiled version. So that could do that. Or the other thing, this comes into play really handy for all the apps that are sort of subscription-based, because where the last changeover, the big curse, was, I don't know if you guys remember this, it killed Office 2003. Yeah, if I remember correctly, yeah. It killed, like, Office 2003. And people would lose their cake over this. And I'm like, yeah, but it's 2008. And they go, yeah, but I'm like, Office is not even that expensive. Microsoft had just at that point brought Office down to where it was $100 for the home and teacher edition. And it was eligible for just about anybody. Like anybody could buy a home and teacher edition. So like, again, if you're on a corporate scale, I get it. That's a big, you know, like, you know, thing for you. But at that time too, not a lot of, until it became Intel Max, not a lot of corporate had large amount of Macs, like, you know, sitting around on the table.
We still get that now with when we do like a data clone from any machine to any machine. You know, people with Office 2008, which we still see a surprisingly large amount.
It cracks me up.
Yeah. When it gets cloned over, it asks for the license again. It's like, well, I don't have it. Well, can't really do much about that, can I?
Yeah, so. But it kills me. Like, how do you sit, and I recently had it happen, which is the reason why I brought it up. Like, how do you sit here in 2020 and launch an app every day that literally screams 2008, and it doesn't make you think that maybe I should give them my $99? It's costing you more for me to sit here and fight this than it is for you to buy a new version of Office.
It's not it's £7 a month these days.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. And they're like, I don't want to pay a monthly fee. And I'm like, do you hear you? Like, I'm about to tax you $250 to sit here and fight this, or you can give them $7 a month. Like, I've actually given up and bought the first year for clients to tell them to get the hell out of my face. it's like, you're killing me, bro. Like, you're making me jump through a hoop that's completely under. Well, I don't like the new ribbon. And it's like, yeah, I don't like putting gas in my car, but that's why I bought an electric, you know. So, like, at some point, you got to, like, nut up, man. It's just, it's computers. It's going to change.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But it will be an interesting transition. I mean, Apple is saying they're going to transition over the next 2 years. So in 2 years, they're not going to...
There will be somebody at month 24.
Oh, totally.
Having a cow that they did not have enough time to get ready. And in the past, it was Pro Tools oriented.
Yeah, always. I mean,
okay. Always Pro Tools.
We've seen that with the 64-bit transition. I mean, there were years where they had time to do it. And now, I mean, now that we know that Apple is doing the ARM thing, you know this was basically preemptive. They were like, okay, we have to get this out of the way. We have to kick everything that is 30-bit, 32-bit out from the platform because the new chip will only run 64-bit.
Okay, correct my math. The 64-bit transition was a 10-year warning. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Not quite.
It was definitely like three, multiple years.
It was three that Apple officially announced it, but it was kind of on the horizon way before that. Like officially
telegraphing it.
We went to 64 over 10 years ago.
Yeah, but but they never said when they would shut off. Like, but they told years ago.
I got that.
They told
so 3 years is official. Yeah. 10 years, you knew it was available.
Yeah.
The minute the first one came out, it was obvious it was time to switch, especially because it was just faster. Yeah. Never as a person delivering a product to said customer, the fact that it was faster, you already should have started. And so that was 10 years. But Apple official announcement was three.
Yeah, and it's still there was still. Tripped up a lot of apps and a lot of people complained about it. And like, I know people like even in the tech sphere were saying Apple should bring back 32-bit because app XYZ doesn't work. Happened like this year, last year. It's very, it's very clear. So we're obviously in 2 years, we're going to have people who are saying, oh, we didn't have enough time and we didn't know and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I have gotten emails from developers for products that, well, actually, I haven't needed to use for a while, where they are bashing on Apple and saying it's Apple's fault that they don't have apps that are 64-bit native. Mm-hmm. Apple sprung this on us. Mm-hmm. We had no idea. This is a last minute change. It's all Apple's fault that we didn't get our apps updated for 64-bit.
And it's not the indie developer who might not have the time or the money to like invest in an old app that they maybe don't even support anymore. It's big companies. Like it's big companies who could definitely afford it and would have the manpower and just didn't do it. Like Cisco, for example, I remember. Like
it's crazy because we're talking a lot of the I forgot which one it was that was the most heinous to me, but I'm like, you charge people a decent clip for this app, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll pick one, and they fixed it quickly. But one of the plugins, I want to say it was Isotope, but it wasn't Isotope because they're pretty fast. But it's basically an $800 like compression and mastering plugin, and they didn't upgrade to 64-bit. And I'm like, it's not an $8 plugin. It's $800 plugin, right? And there's a bunch of sort of like free VST plugins that get you close, but you got to stack like 10 of them to get to that versus this was a suite. And they were through the roof, you know, like, oh my God, I can't believe they did this to us. And I'm like, okay, cakewalk, relax, bro. You guys got a lot. You come with every interface. So you're getting licensing fees out the yin-yang. Shut up already.
Yeah. And that's it. Like, I can understand that the smaller developers, I don't understand the big guys.
Why is it always the audio guys, though?
Because I know. It's always the audio guys.
I think that has something to do with audio and video in general, which is lower level and probably more effort to transform. Like a standard app, like, I don't know, PC Calc or 1Password probably, using standard operating systems, APIs, like standard Mac APIs, probably very easy to transition, like might be, I think in PC Calc's case, it was even, like he said, it was like a checkbox and it was done. It just worked. I don't remember who it was. I think it was PC Calc. I might be wrong about that. But there were apps, like big apps, that were like, oh, done. Took me like 20 seconds. The audio stuff, the video stuff, like anything like that is usually lower level and probably more difficult, especially if you're transitioning from CPU architectures.
But once we went to core audio, you took out the drivers, so it's not really a driver-based thing.
It's still, there's still a lot of low-level C code involved in all of that, and that can be differences. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I know too much about this space, but I know it's not it is not as easy on that level. I've reported bugs for drivers once or twice. I think once I fixed the Linux driver bug myself, but that's about the level I've ever interacted
with. Yeah, but you know what, the reason why it was always so crazy to me is because you look at Rogue Amoeba, right? Mm-hmm. You got like four guys out of Boston, and still in not really a mama's basement. It's a really fleshed out basement, but mm-hmm. they're in a really small boutique office. You know, there's not like mm-hmm. 87 people over there, and they do it.
Yep.
But Apogee, who got, you know, they're all driving around in Ferraris and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And Apogee's like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. You should have bought a PC. And it's like, man, F you. Mm-hmm. Get your stuff out of the Apple store.
Yeah.
And then they get kicked out the Apple store. And it's like, oh, Apple kicked this out the store.
Yeah. And that's
because you're taking up real estate.
And that's the thing. Like, if they were honest and simply said, well, it wasn't worth it for us. I mean, yeah, that would be annoying for people.
And but we're used to that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be annoying. I'm not going to lie. And there would be a lot of people not liking it, but at least it would be honest.
Yeah.
But instead, they're blaming someone else. There's one big, big, big thing that Apple has talked about, and that's virtualization. There will be no bootcamp. A very clear statement on, like, on podcasts and other like press things that Apple has done. No bootcamp.
No bootcamp makes sense.
Yeah. They said their solution is pure virtualization. I mean, I'm pretty sure not everybody will be happy about that. I know people, like, I mean, I know a lot of people who are saying the best Windows PC is a Mac, and they just used bootcamp and installed it.
Oh, I have clients like that.
Yeah. And for them, that will be a very interesting transition. We don't know yet exactly what's going to work and what's going to happen and how Windows might run. Neither Apple nor Microsoft is saying anything about it, which is probably like they're still figuring it out and don't want to talk about it. It might not be ready.
It's going to be very interesting how they implement it, because a lot of the data recovery tools and a lot of the kind of board schematic tools and board view tools that I use are exclusively available in Windows. Mm-hmm. So I have my MacBook bootcamped. I don't mind using Windows. I prefer using Mac OS, but it's a kind of necessary evil for me.
Yeah.
Obviously, when I plug things in to my Mac on a very simple level, when I use virtual machines at the moment, it doesn't mm-hmm. always pick it up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get that right for me if they're going to completely mm-hmm. abandon bootcamp, because bootcamp works and it works really well, to be fair. They're going to have to get the virtualization mm-hmm. spot on able to make that leap.
And that's,
I think that's going to come down more to what Parallels
and VMware do.
And VMware,
of course.
Yeah. It's not just them. I mean, we've seen in the keynote that Apple actually worked with Parallels. They were actually showing off Parallels. But it goes down way deeper than that. Apple has to provide it on an operating system level, has to provide a way how to run those and support that. Actually, not just an operating system level. It goes down to CPU support. A lot of CPUs these days, Intel CPUs, have virtualization support. And Apple has to do that. And the A12Z CPUs don't do that. And Apple said as much. They said that the transition kit does not do virtualization. That's not baked in, not working yet. So that will be interesting. But as I said, Apple is very shy, like, and doesn't talk about virtualization yet. So I'm guessing that there is more, that is still a work in progress, and there's stuff that they don't want to announce until it's fully baked, kind of.
Yeah, I'm thinking Apple learned their lesson with AirPower, and that they're not going to announce any sort of official virtualization support until they actually have it.
Yeah, You can run, I mean, they showed that off. You can run Parallels and you can run like Ubuntu and some other tools that are running on ARM, like natively. So anything native can be run in Parallels. That's not a problem. But cross-platform, so cross, like running Intel versions of Windows, for example. I mean, there's a ARM-based Windows, but you can't even buy a license for it. Like it only ships to OEMs currently. But like anything cross CPU architecture will be very interesting to see, because that is not as easy. I mean, Apple can do a lot of things on the OS level with apps and whatever, and have Rosetta and all of those tools. But if you're running another operating system, that doesn't work. You need like really deep hooks into the system to do that and into the CPU. And we will have to see how that works and what it is. But it is an open story. Apple was, as I said, very clear that they said there is no bootcamp anymore. Very, very clear statement. Virtualization is the way to go. That's all they're saying right now.
Yeah, one of the big ones, like for me, like I love bootcamp in the beginning, especially because of the way, you know, my CNC or my laser machine just worked better when it's absolutely booted.
Sure.
And then Parallels got better. I think with the release of 11 or 12, I might have been 12, where it handled the hardware a lot better. So then I had to stop, you know, booting and rebooting and rebooting. And then even that got old. So Intel Nook, it was so cheap, and it does exactly what I need to do: print to the CNC or print to the laser. So like I still do all the design work in, you know, the Apple side of things, you know, in Rhino or Fusion 360, and then just, you know, send a file over to Google Drive and then print from a Nook. So for those people that have just that one or two specific apps that they kind of run, and if it starts to get crazy, man, a Nook is cheap. You're talking like $300-$400. You can get a perfectly good working Nook. And that Nook is the most expensive of that ilk. If you buy a Gigabyte Brick or Acer Fanless, then you can get almost twice as much computer for the price. So it's getting to the point where bootcamp, as unless it's a space problem, it's not really that big a deal anymore.
I mean, the other thing, the issue, one of the bigger issues with bootcamp was that it basically had to disable a lot of security things that Apple was doing. Basically, if you installed anything bootcamp, Linux or Windows, didn't matter, it disabled your entire Thunderbolt security. Like even for the Mac, like completely, because otherwise those systems wouldn't work properly and stuff like that. So there were a lot of compromises that had to be made. And I don't know what on a technical level the problem with bootcamp is, why they can't do it. But I think the big problem is probably that, there wouldn't be a Windows they could install.
I think for the large base too, we're past that, right? Bootcamp, okay, I might get myself in trouble here, but I'm opinionated, so to hell with you. In the beginning, bootcamp was designed as if, like, come on over, our side is nice, you know, all right, like, we understand you don't understand our side, so we're going to give you a space where you can go back and forth. You know, that's what it was really designed for. It was designed as the bring yourself over to veganism lightly. You know what I mean? Okay, you eat vegetables all week, you have a steak on Saturday. And then now we got you. Okay, put the steak away, son. It's just all about romaine only. And as from the time that they started that to now where we're killing it, let's call it, it's been over a 10-year window. And most of the people, for the most part, the large percentage are fully baked Apple or fully baked PC or like Callum, where we use full versions of both because the half version is just not really the best experience anyway. So there's a handful of people that bootcamp back and forth for whatever reason, but it's not large enough to cripple the rest of the OS over.
I completely agree with that. I think, you know, from my point of view, the only reason why I use Windows is because I have to. If I could do everything that I needed to do within Mac OS, I would tomorrow, but I just can't at the moment because of the nature of what I do. So
And I mean, we, like in our company, I still have one or two things I have to run on a Windows machine. I literally just use one of our many Windows servers. We have Windows servers running, and I just like remote in and do the one thing I need to do, and then that's it. And that I do that every 2 weeks for like an hour, and that's it. So
and we didn't even think about that virtualized PCs. I have a spin up, you know, You can just basically run the whole thing. The last macro, you, Mike, and I were walking around. There was a company that was selling rentable spin-ups on like a digital ocean style thing where you can have a full Windows 10 in the air.
About that.
Yeah, you can totally do
Mike,
that.
Mike, Patrice, and I interviewed them right like the last macro before we went to Mel's.
Yeah, I remember.
And
that.
you can just rent. I need to use Office because my company is just being a jerk about it, but I really want to use this MacBook. So you can literally rent an entire Windows 10 in the air. And back to our original conversation about people that are still like me, have a 2008 that's still working. Your experience running the spin up in the air is probably faster than running your 2008.
It is. It is.
So I win my old conversation.
Yeah. Last couple of points on the Mac side. You can on the ARM Mac, so it's not going to work on a Big Sur on the Intel side, but on the ARM side, on the Apple Silicon side, you can run iOS apps on your Mac natively.
That's going to be so awesome.
It is an option for developers. It is enabled by default, but the developer can opt out. Like, for example, if they're selling already a Mac app, I mean, obviously a proper Mac app is better than like a iOS or iPad OS app that is running on your Mac, or if it's completely broken and they don't want to do it at all for whatever reason, like it just doesn't work properly, and they're like, oh,
yeah, like the interface just doesn't translate
because
well.
Because they've never updated it to anything modern. There are apps like that out there; they can disable that, but it is enabled by default, and that is pretty cool. I'm looking forward to quite a few apps that I would love to have that I. I always go to my, I pick up my iPad to even if I'm on my Mac to use them because they're just better.
Yeah, true story. Now, you remember Fluid?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's I forget the name of it, but there's something similar to Fluid that lets you do that now, or you could just run Xcode and you can kind of do it now. But the people that are going to be pissed are like Instagram that for whatever reason insist on wanting you to run your live from your camera's little tiny camera. And it's like, Instagram, the hell with you. I have all this excellent equipment. And, you know, like over here, I can do this all day long on this show, you know, switch between cameras, but you won't let me do it. So like, why did I buy all of this expensive equipment and you won't let me do it? Now, so to be able to, until they block it, run Instagram on my computer and then do my show or my DJ set from my wonderful cameras as opposed to this little dot in the front of this piece of glass.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, there are some limitations and there are some questions how it's going to work. But for the most part, I mean, the funny thing is Apple has been doing this all along. Like every developer has probably done this because it's nothing, it's not different than the simulator, really. The developers, the app simulator, like a little iPhone that you can basically run on your Mac. And there are some limitations to that. Like certain features are not going to work. Obviously, anything that requires hardware, like sensors or whatever, not going to work. That's pretty clear. Like custom, like multi-touch things, probably not going to work. Like until we get a touchscreen Mac or something, we don't know. So there are some limitations, but for the most part, a lot of apps I think would work great on a Mac. Like especially the simple, like Instagram is a perfect example. I mean, I wish they would have like at least an iPad app. But yeah, I mean,
hello.
Yeah, but I mean, you could run like until they block it, or if they don't, hopefully, you could run at least the Instagram app and get like a decent experience. It's still gonna be a tiny window on your Mac screen. Like it's, I think you can resize, but if the app doesn't support it, it's not gonna do it. But Apple tries their best to make this experience as good as possible. But obviously, like a proper Mac app is the preferred way. And I think this way, they're trying to push developers a little bit to say, hey, this is running already on your Mac, on a Mac. Maybe you should think about at least doing like a Catalyst version where it's like a little bit optimized and it works
a little
bit.
If everything's
better.
Running on A12Z or whatever the next A12Z
A13 is, A13 probably. Yeah.
It's already done, right? I mean, in theory, you just remap it to the right hardware changes.
Well, you don't even have to do that because that is done by Apple. Like, you don't have to do anything there. It's more like you want to support, like, bigger screens, multiple windows.
So it's layouts. You just
layouts, but even like small changes.
Even layouts does a lot of that automatically too, right? Yeah. I know you have to tweak it at the end because I tried moving layouts and it baffles me.
No, there are certain things like you can have a menu, for example, in your Catalyst app, like Mac specific things, like having a menu, having maybe a taskbar icon, stuff like that. But those are smaller changes usually at the end. Like the core app.
You know what's going to happen? Trackpad sales are going to go through the roof because you're going to need it in order to have that dual feeling.
And the multi-touch support.
Yeah.
Right.
It is true. Yeah. So,
I need this to work on the trackpad.
That would be cool. Yeah.
That is like very cool.
Days of my 5-pound mouse are over.
Apple said the first ARM Macs are going to ship this year. We don't know what it is. They haven't announced anything yet, obviously, but they said this year. But they also announced, and that was, I think, a little bit of an interesting move. Tim said at the end, they have Intel Macs in the pipeline that they're very excited about. So they're going to still ship a couple of Intel Macs, probably for like the business and enterprise market and people who want them.
Well, that 10-core iMac is coming out next month, Apple.
Yeah,
or September maybe. At the latest.
Probably.
No, I need it. Yeah. It's time to switch. So they have been begging
rumors
for it.
They have been benchmarks and rumors for it. So hopefully it's close for you.
I don't. You know me. I don't like dabbling in rumors at all. Yeah. But because it's time to swap iMacs, I really need that 10-core iMac. Hey, I have. I don't know if you guys remember the movie Major League. I got like Jobu. I got like my version of Jobu. He got room, so I have my little setup over here. So I'm getting ready for my 10-core iMac. Like,
nice.
Don't mess with Jobu's room. We must speak to bats. We must speak to bats.
Yeah.
So yeah, me and Pedro Calderon need a new iMac, Apple.
You know, I think it would be cool to see Apple release an A12 daughter card for the Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could have the ultimate machine where you're running ARM and Intel natively simultaneously.
That would be interesting. I don't know whether it's possible, but it would be.
You remember Orange Micro? Like, I was the coolest kid on the block with my Orange Micro card. And this is before Parallels, but that's how we got Parallels, actually. I think Connectix, which used to make Orange Micro, eventually became Parallels. And these guys pulled off three major things that like has gone forgotten because it's so normal by the wayside. Mm. The first one was the PC daughter card, right? So you could run a full-fledged PC inside your Mac with the Orange Micro card, right? The other one was they had the what is it called? The 8040. No, I forgot the name of it now. But you know, the old Mac chips, you could run that alongside PowerPC. Because it had the, you know, the regular old chips. But then, I don't know if you guys remember, you could run PS2 games on an initial color bubble iMac, right? Because Connectix made this software that would let you run PS2 games. So you had a special controller, looked like a DualShock controller, USB plugging in, one of the very first USB machines. And it was fantastic. And Sony blocked it because Sony hardware was mad that Sony software was making so much money because all these Apple people were buying PlayStation games to play PlayStation games on the original Bondi Blue iMac.
Mm-hmm.
And that company now eventually became Parallels, and the rest is sort of history.
I used to turn those iMacs into light.
Yo, that's cool.
Yeah, and just a bit of a tangent.
Yeah, that's cool. I think especially the orange one. The orange one and the paisley one make a cool light.
They were sort of perfect for it because obviously you had the Apple logo in the back. So all you need to do is just take, kind of strip the casing down, glue it together, and then literally just put a hammer through the back of the Apple logo and it fitted the light fitting in perfectly. Mm-hmm. So they could dangle from the ceiling.
Yeah, I remember the fish tanks. That's all I remember. And it eventually became a kit. You can just get a fish tank, an SE30 fish tank.
I brought the kit. I haven't done it yet.
This podcast and all the other podcasts on the British Tech Network is supported by TSO Hosts. A really cool company. I really enjoy working with them. They sponsor two of our servers, or give us two of the servers. Well, the two servers that we have and that we use for everything on BTN. Runs everything, the website, the live, like the live stream, all the files and all the downloads and like everything we do. Like the APIs, the Alexa skill, all of that. And yeah, they're really, really good. Like rock solid since we got them. They have like really cool like domain names and web hosting packages. They have pre-built WordPress packages that you can download. Or they can download that you can install on their servers. and yeah, obviously servers as well. And yeah, support has been really cool. I always like watch them a little bit, like when like a BTN listener is talking to them on Twitter, and they're really helpful, really fast, really responsive, and just overall really cool. And yeah, good company. And all they want from us for this like supporting British Tech Network is that we give them some brand recognition on social media. They don't like, I mean, they obviously like if you buy stuff from them, but you don't have to. Like if you head over to Twitter and say, hey at TSO Host, thank you for supporting at British Tech Network, all they want, they're absolutely fine with that. In case you need something like a domain name, or as I said, like a WordPress site maybe, or a server, there's an offer code BTN20 that will give you 20% off everything they offer. So I think that's also very helpful. And I know quite a few people on BTN who already are customers and are happy customers. So if you're in the market for something, head over to tsohost.com. And as I said, BTN20 will give you 20% off. And the other sponsor is Imand Max. And I'm always very happy that I have Callum here so I can talk to him about like what crazy repairs he had to do and what crazy like Macs they have in a refurbished store, because that's what they do, like data recovery repairs, and they have really cool devices. Anything noteworthy this week?
Actually had quite an interesting one earlier on. It was actually one where we drew the line and said no, we weren't going to fix it, which is relatively rare. So
yeah, that's very rare for you.
Yeah, someone came in with an Apple Watch 2, and the crown was broken. Mm-hmm. And we just said to them, look, it's a device, it's a bit too old, and it probably isn't going to be worth you getting it fixed for the money. And I looked at doing the repair, and obviously getting the screen off an Apple Watch isn't too easy. So probably one of our few limits we found this week. So
I mean, given that you repaired a completely destroyed iPhone 8 a couple of weeks ago, where like everybody would have said, well, this is like impossible and like nothing can be done, and you fixed it, that is a very, very very rare thing that you have to say, well, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it takes a lot, yeah.
And I mean, you do data recovery as well, so like even if it's not a Mac, as long as it has a hard drive of some sort, you will try your best to get the data back, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So we've actually had a data recovery in this week, someone's backup drive with like a portfolio with 5 years worth of work and backup of their wedding photos or something along those lines as well. So that's one that's waiting for me next week. So
cool. And if you're a BTN listener and you need something from Imand Max, one of their services, or you want to buy a refurbished Mac or iPad, you get 5% off if you mention BTN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Time for the cool thing. Doc, start us off, please.
I'm trying to find the link now, but I can't find it. Why? Why are you doing me like that? Anyway, what I wanted to show you was, of course, I've gotten Callum hooked and then now got myself hooked on these like really cool low budget in-ear monitors. So I have the original ones, which Callum's wearing right now, right? And then I got these new ones. These are known as the CCA4. They are even cheaper, but they also sound just as amazing. And they do come in various levels, but these can be had for like $15.
Wow.
I wouldn't call that like 12 pounds, right? And again, it features the cool like removable wire, so you can change wires later. And I did order a beefier wire. And then when you do that, it comes in looking like this, you know, where it's a big, thick, like multi-core wire. Mm-hmm. But I accidentally ordered it with a 2.5 mil, like a dummy. So I needed an adapter. But for really, really good sound. And again, practically disposable, but you don't have to dispose them because you can just change the wire. You can pick up a set of CCA monitors similar to the original ones I showed you, which was the KZ ZSM Pros. So if you haven't stepped on to the in-ear monitor game, you should, because A, it's extremely cheap. B, they sound amazing. Like, I'm at the point now that with the Bluetooth wire that you can get for them, I tested my friend's one out the other day. I actually like them better than my AirPod Pros.
Wow.
Wow.
Ewan would love to hear this because he always gave us crap for spending $250 on AirPod Pros. I did get mine as a gift. Actually.
Right. Weren't they $350?
It was $250. AirPod Pro is $250. But when you consider, like, number one, the initial pair with the wire is less than 20 quid is the proper term. and then you can buy a Bluetooth hook, you know, the one, it does hang around your neck kind of thing for another 20 quid. But like, if I have to replace just one AirPod because I lost one, it's almost 100. I think it's $99 to replace one. Yeah. Like, I love the feature of go to your different Macs and it catches up with you and stuff like that. We're not that lazy that I can't hit the button and let it switch. Mm-hmm. So my AirPods, which I adore, have not come out of the box in like 3 weeks because this sounds better. It's more comfortable. I can wear it longer. I don't sweat losing it. And even out of the box, just stock, they're comfortable, right, Callum?
These are fresh out of the box. They're fantastic. They're some of the, I don't spend a lot on earphones. I'm probably a bit like you, because I just lose them and break them and stuff like that. These are some of the best I've ever owned. You're gonna have to send me some links because you just cost me a lot more money.
The other thing, Callum, that I would tell you to check out is there is a company called SpinFit. It's only gonna cost you like $8 or $9, but they make a softer, more comfy little, what you call it, that fits in your ear. And the difference is how this one is when you stick it in, it doesn't move. The spin fit is slightly taller. So when you put it in, it actually allow it to bend properly to your canal and it'll fit even more comfy. And again, it's super cheap. So once you know whether you use a small, medium, or large, you just order the blue, yellow, or purple package accordingly. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to even be better comfortable. So like, I am so amazed at what they call the budget hi-fi category. Oh my God, this is a rabbit hole. But again, not an expensive rabbit hole, so you can play. Like, it's cheaper than that bottle of whiskey that I feed
them. So you know what those priorities are. Expensive whiskey, cheap headphones.
Yeah, there you go. Let me find that box. I can see the link.
All right. Jeff, what's your cool thing?
My cool thing, turns out, is one of the Design Award picks. And it is Loom. And so I've been playing with it since the awards were announced, because I hadn't been aware of Loom before that. And what I'm finding is that it's a really cool animation app. And it's not like you're going to make these incredibly intricate, highly detailed animations because of the nature of the way that the app works. But like for my drawing style, this actually is a really good fit for taking things that I would draw that are static, and then and then actually doing them as animations instead. So it's $10 on the iPad.
Well, that's nothing, basically.
Yeah, it's a cool little app, and I'm having fun with it. I need to have some more time to play with it, because right now I'm doing stupid things like I'll start a drawing, like maybe it's someone's head and they're looking one direction and they're turning to look the other direction, and partway through my animation the head disappears and I just have the face elements, and I know it's just me forgetting to do a step along the way to make sure that I'm carrying over everything from the previous cell. But still, it's a cool little application, and it's surprisingly functional.
Yeah, and it sounds like also a fun thing for the family to do, like together.
Yes.
It does support family sharing, I just saw. So like if you buy it once, your entire family can use it, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's a very cool little thing.
I'm going to give that a try, I think. Callum, what's your cool thing?
Sorry, I was just looking at the things Doc had sent me. Stops.
You muted yourself.
Yeah, well done, mate.
We're professionals.
My cool thing this week is... absolutely. Is a laptop stand, which is really neat, actually. I got it a couple of days ago, and it basically fits to the bottom of your MacBook almost flush. And it's really good when you're out and about. So, it's probably half a centimetre added to the bottom of your MacBook. It folds away really, really nicely. It has three different settings, I believe. I think it's about £25-30. It's just really neat, especially if you do like having, you know, your keyboard raised and you're out and about. It's one of those, you barely know it's there. So, you know, from my point of view, I put my MacBook on like a stand with a monitor, so it kind of works ideally for me, because I can still have it flat when I need to have it flat, and it doesn't really affect anything, and it doesn't, you know, take up any room, or, and you know, it's not another thing I have to think about. So yeah, it's really neat. And also, if you want to transfer it between MacBooks, I don't know why you would, but this was one of the selling points. It very easily adheses to the bottom of the MacBook, so you can
it sucks on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you just take it off and put it on your next one or whatever. So
yeah, it's £25 plus delivery. It's S650 delivery.
Plus
about,
yeah.
Okay. So about 30,
yeah.
31.
Yeah, I think it's only £3 delivery here. It's a really neat one. I've had it a couple of days. It's really neat. It's good.
Sounds really cool. All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much for doing this. I wish we had more time to talk about the Mac. There's just so much. I'm gonna go through more videos, and I highly recommend watching some of the videos. Even if you're not a developer, there are quite a few interesting sessions in there that are not too technical. Like deployment things and architectural things, and very well explained as well. Like you would even understand it if you didn't have too much technical knowledge or like developer knowledge. So highly recommend it.
You mean like Jeff?
For example.
Right.
Like he could like learn a couple of new skills, and then, I don't know, work, like start developing Mac apps, for example.
I'm scared to know what kind of Mac apps Jeff would create.
That's a good question.
Hey, an Apple Design Award this year goes to Mountain Lion Watch. Yeah.
That's right. Always look up.
Yeah.
You could have like a no trousers filter.
Yeah. No.
There's a big cats, no pants development company out of Boulder, Colorado.
And now with the new Mountain Lion Stew recipe.
That's right.
Yeah. You can have a moose as well, something like that.
Sure. Moose.
Yeah, why not?
That's funny, Callum.
That's so funny.
Thanks. Cheers.
Doc, let the good listeners know where they can find you.
I'm going to be working on my aspic recipe. And because Callum brought up moose. But you can find me all over the interwebs at docrock. KN. Please, if you are stuck at home and you're having to do a lot of Zoom-oriented stuff, or you know you're trying to step up your look from the house because you have to work from the house. My YouTube channel right now is mostly focused on work from home hacks to make your quality and stuff look better. As you can see, like I use my vacation camera as my master camera, as opposed to that thing over there with the tape on it, because it just looks better, it sounds better. And the reason how I got into all of this budget stuff is finding cheap microphones and headphones and stuff that regular people would buy, because you wouldn't necessarily go out and buy a $400 beast, your stuff while you're just working at home. So that's what I've been focusing on. So if you happen to be stuck and you need some help there, please reach out. I'll take care of you.
Sounds cool. Jeff, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm JGam at both places. And here on the Mac Show, later on today on the Big Show, I make the rounds on a lot of people's shows. And did I announce last week that I am getting ready to launch a podcast?
You kind of pre-announced it, yeah. You didn't mention what it was exactly, but you pre-announced that there would be one.
Well, then I'll tell you a little bit more. So what I want to do is talk to all the cool and amazing people that I have met over the years, and all the people that I'm going to meet. And so I'm not going to tease any more about it yet, but there you go. There's a little bit more.
You got to talk to two cool people. Okay, that sounds... at least we know you're not going to talk to moose or mountain lions now, right? That's like a little bit more of it.
Unless any of them are cool people.
That's
they could be refrigerated, I suppose.
could be. All right, last but by no means least, Callum, thanks for being here as well, and tell people where they can find you.
It's a pleasure as always. So you can find us at imamax.com. Everything we do is on there. You can get hold of any one of us at all of our socials. So imamax on there. You can drop us an email at info@imamax. I'm at O'Hara Callum on Twitter. If you want to reach out, ask any questions, you're more than welcome to. I'm in the Slack room as well.
Very good. Thank you so much. And you can find me and everything I do on thepatrice.com. Also, all the social links are there. I also have a podcast that Callum is going to be on next week. I think this one is going to be released then the week after. It's called Foodie Flashback. We talk about food and food-related memories, and we just do a deep dive into like your food history and anything that comes to mind. It's a lot of fun. Really enjoyed doing like all the, I think, 12 episodes I've done so far. And if you're interested, head over to foodieflashback.com. And if you want to be on the show, which I would really appreciate, because just like Jeff, I want to talk to as many cool people as I can find, then reach out to me and we'll set something up. And yeah, you can find this very podcast network and all the podcasts we're doing on britishtechnetwork.com. where we have the Mac Show and the Big Show, and there's a photo show, and we have the news show, very important. 5 days a week, we get daily, couple minutes, daily news. Super interesting. Kyle makes those, supported by our very own listeners. And if you are not supporting that yet, then head over to britishtechnetwork.com and make sure to like give us a little money so that we can pay Kyle to do that, because he does an awesome job and has been doing that for years. And the only reason why we can do that is because of you. And yeah, with that, thank you so much for listening, and talk to you next week.